She asked me to write a love letter, something she could hide in a shoebox in the drawer. No names, no promises, just something she can look at to remind her what the day is for. Lonely lady, middle of the afternoon. Lonely lady, come in feeling blue. Love letter on a paper napkin folded, addressed to you, lonely lady. How precious you are, I mean to be. How priceless you are, will always be. How special you are, no one can see. But
I'll keep it a secret. I'll keep it a secret. I'll keep it a secret. Sincerely.
He says he's tired of stories. He says he longs for some little language such as lovers use. Broken words like the shuffling of feet upon the pavement. You want a cup of coffee?
Should we walk or take a bus?
I don't like shopping.
You don't like standing still?
One black, one with milk.
And a powdered donut, please.
A noise, a commotion. Clash of devices, of emblems, of mottos, of epistles, of sonnets, of epigrams, of books, of chattering scribbles, of terminal sweats, of lives consumed, of cries that deafen the stars, laments that make hell's caverns reverberate, aches that strike the living dumb. Sights that exhaust the pity of the gods. For those eyes, for those cheeks, for that bosom, for that white, for that crimson, for that tongue, for that tooth, for that look, for that mantle, that glove, that slipper, that high heel, that avarice, that giggle, that skull, that empty window, that eclipse of the sun, that hammer, that disgust, that stench, that sepulcher, that cesspit, that carrion, that malaria, that uttermost insult and lapse of nature, that with the surface, a shadow, a phantasm, a dream, an enchantment of Circe, plied in the service of reproduction, should deceive. In the matter of beauty, which simultaneously comes and goes, issues and dies, flowers and rots, and is somewhat beautiful on the outside, but truly and fixedly contains within a shipyard, a workshop, a custom house, a marketplace of every foulness, toxin, and poison that our stepmother nature has managed to produce. And once the seed she requires has been paid out, she often repays it with a morass, a remorse, a sadness, a flaccidity, a headache, a lassitude. This and that distemper that are known to all the world, so that every place aches bitterly where it itched so sweetly before.
One evening, when I was still living at Grand Street and Monroe, Isamu Noguchi came to visit me. There was nothing in the room, no furniture, no paintings. The floor was covered, wall to wall, with cocoa matting. The windows had no curtains, no drapes. Isamu Noguchi said, an old shoe would look beautiful in this room. You probably know the one about the two monks, but I'll tell it anyway. They were walking along one day when they came to a stream where a young lady was waiting, hoping that someone would help her across. Without hesitating, one of the monks picked her up and carried her across, putting her down safely on the other side. The two monks continued walking along, and after some time, the second one, unable to restrain himself, said to the first, "You know we're not allowed to touch women. Why did you carry that woman across the stream?" The first monk replied, "Put her down. I did 2 hours ago." Once, when several of us were driving up to Boston, we stopped at a roadside restaurant for lunch. There was a table near a private window where we could all look out and see a pond. People were swimming and diving. There were special arrangements for sliding into the water. Inside the restaurant was a jukebox. Somebody put a dime in. I noticed that the music that came out accompanied the swimmers, though they didn't hear it. One day when the windows were open, Christian Wolf played one of his pieces at the piano. Sounds of traffic, boat horns, were heard not only during the silences in the music, but being louder, were more easily heard than the piano sounds themselves. Afterward, someone asked Christian Wolf to play the piece again with the windows closed. Christian Wolf said he'd be glad to, but that it wasn't really necessary, since the sounds of the environment were in no sense an interruption of those of the music. One evening I was walking along Hollywood Boulevard, nothing much to do. I stopped and looked in the window of a stationery shop. A mechanized pen was suspended in space in such a way that as a mechanized roll of paper passed by it, the pen went through the motions of the same penmanship exercises I had learned as a child in the third grade. Centrally placed in the window was an advertisement explaining the mechanical reasons for the perfection of the operation of the suspended mechanical pen. I was fascinated, for everything was going wrong. The pen was tearing the paper to shreds and spattering ink all over the window and on the advertisement, which nevertheless remained legible. It was after I got to Boston that I went into the anechoic chamber at Harvard University. Anybody who knows me knows this story. I am constantly telling it. Anyway, in that silent room, I heard two sounds, one high and one low. Afterward, I asked the engineer in charge why, if the room was so silent, I had heard two sounds. He said, "Describe them." I did. He said, "The high one was your nervous system in operation. The low one was your blood in circulation." Years ago in Chicago, I was asked to accompany two dancers who were providing entertainment at a businesswomen's dance party given in a hall of the YWCA. After the entertainment, the jukebox was turned on so everybody could dance. There was no orchestra, they were saving money. However, the goings-on became very expensive. One of the arms in the jukebox moved a selected record onto the turntable. The playing arm moved to an extraordinarily elevated position. After a slight pause, it came down rapidly and heavily on the record, smashing it. Another arm came into the situation and removed the debris. The first arm moved another selected record onto the turntable. The playing arm moved up again, paused, came down quickly, smashing the record. The debris was removed by the third arm, and so on. And meanwhile, all the flashing colored lights associated with jukeboxes worked perfectly, making the whole scene glamorous. After he finished translating into German the first lecture I gave at Darmstadt last September, Christian Wolff said, "The stories at the end are very good." But they'll probably say you're naive. I do hope you can explode that idea. Down in Greensboro, North Carolina, David Tudor and I gave an interesting program. We played five pieces three times each. They were the Klavier Strip 11 by Karlheinz Stockhausen, Christian Wolff's Duo for Pianists, Martin Feldman's Intermission No. 6, Earl Brown's Four Systems, and My Variations. All of these pieces are composed in various ways that have in common indeterminacy of performance. Each performance is unique, is interesting to the composers and performers, as to the audience. Everyone, in fact, becomes a listener. I explained all this to the audience before the musical program began. I pointed out that one is accustomed to the a piece of music as an object suitable for understanding and subsequent evaluation, but that here the situation is quite other. These pieces, I said, are not objects, but processes, essentially purposeless. Naturally, then, I had to explain the purpose of having something purposeless. I said the sounds were just sounds, and that if they weren't just sounds, I was, of course, using the editorial we would do something about it in the next composition. I said that since the sounds were sounds, this gave people hearing them a chance to be people centered within themselves where they actually are, not off artificially in the distance as they are accustomed to be, trying to figure out what is being said by some artist by means of sounds. Finally, I said that the purpose of this purposeless music would be achieved if people learned to listen, that when they listened, they might discover that they preferred the sounds of everyday life to the ones they were about to hear in the musical program. That was all right as far as I was concerned. However, to come back to my story.
We're just friends. We usually meet at the bar. I always say, "Honey, tell me who you are. The kids are all grown up, and the man's always away, and everything is coming down around her day by day. Lonely lady, middle of the afternoon. Lonely lady, come in feeling blue. Love letter on a paper napkin folded, addressed to you, lonely lady. Precious you are, I mean to me.
How priceless you are, will always be.
How special you are, no one can see. But I'll keep it a secret. I'll keep it a secret. I'll keep it a secret. Sincerely.
How precious.
Oh, may I never come to woo you, love, without which I've no wish for happiness. Though for its sake I sacrifice to prove I've no wish not to wish for its largesse. Whether the sky bright, dark, chill or hot, the phoenix is but one and ever true. No destiny or fate can breach the knot that even death itself could not undo. For heart, spirit, and soul, no pleasure,
no
liberty, or life can render such smile, or sustenance, or amity, as were more sweet, or gracious, or more tender than the grief,
gold,
and deathly toll I have by nature, will, and destiny. His chief erogenous zone lay inside his head.
Who said that?
I did.
You should take a walk every day.
I can't afford it. And on a nice day, it scrambles my mind.
You want to go home?
Yeah. I guess it's getting me.
We can take a taxi.
Can I have the check, please?